You're listening to Out of Bounds with Daily Bruin Sports here on UCLAradio.com. Daily Bruin Sports is your ultimate source for UCLA athletics, and Out of Bounds provides you with an in-depth look at the UCLA sports scene like nobody else can. Here are your hosts, Andrew Erickson, Kevin Bowman, and Jason Dranch.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Out of Bounds with Daily Bruin Sports here on UCLAradio.com. I am Andrew Erickson, Daily Bruin Sports senior staffer and football beat writer.
And I am Kevin Bowman, Daily Bruin Sports editor.
And Kevin, talk to me a little bit how your weekend was, you know, how it was in the office for the Oregon game.
I wasn't at the office.
Okay.
I was at an apartment watching it there.
You were at the bachelor pad.
The bachelor pad, yes. Yeah. Nice. It was okay. I don't know, not as fun as I'm sure you, driving 14 hours to get there.
Yeah, it was a long haul to get there. We stopped in Sacramento, where I lived the first night, and then carried on our way on Friday and drove back right after the game when we were done with our stories at about 11 o'clock, all the way straight to Southern California. So that was a weird experience. I had the 11:30 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. shift. So
brutal.
Yeah, funny story, actually. We had jalapeno chips, and I actually put the dust in my eye to keep myself awake.
Not true.
Well, you can ask others.
It's an urban legend.
It's kind of, yeah, it's an urban legend at this point, but maybe you'll do a road trip with me sometime. We can find out if it's really true. All right. So let's get right into it with our world-famous Westwood Week in review. Men's soccer, after playing four overtime games in a row, finally pulled through on Sunday to hand number three Washington its first loss of the season with a 2-1 win. This comes after a Friday home game in which the Bruins tied with Oregon State. Oregon State, yeah. UCLA has three road games before NCAA tournament play begins. So that's good to get that win on their resume. You know, there seems, you know, like they're the team that will definitely be considered for the NCAA tournament. I think that, I mean, not a first round bye necessarily, but they'll be in the mix. And, you know, for a young team, a team that's kind of had those, you know, not so good moments to get that huge win against a team like Washington.
Yeah, that's number great. Four versus number three. So that's a big win for them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And next we have, after a 3-1 loss to Washington on Friday night, the UCLA women's volleyball team dug themselves out of a hole on Sunday with a 3-1 win over Washington State. That marks the Bruins' first home win of the season, which it's kind of late in the season if you're getting your first home
really
win.
Yeah, it's really late. I think they're the one UCLA fall team that will not make the playoffs, just because they're there's some like 3-7 in Pac-12, but they're really not doing too well.
They have a winning record overall, but
right.
Pac-12, I think every team, I'm not sure if they have a winning record in Pac-12, but I think every team in the Pac-12 has a winning record.
Right.
Maybe besides them.
How is that possible? Oh, winning record, like, overall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, playing North Texas will do that to you. But, two years removed from a national title, not the greatest showing from the Bruins this season, but there's always next season, as they say. The UCLA men's water polo team, they could do very well this season. Bounce back from a loss to Stanford last week by coming back to defeat number three Pacific on Sunday. They have potentially the best player in the conference in Balas Erdely from, I believe he's Serbian. So, yeah, he's a very, very good player. The Bruins also notched an 18-5 win over UC Irvine on Friday. So a good sign for the Bruins coming back. You know, these obviously aren't, you know, it's not the USC win that they need, but with water polo, it's just a matter of making it to the tournament and then all bets are off once you play one of the top two teams. Kind of can go either way.
Mm-hmm. And after a first place finish at the Betsy Rawls Invitational 2 weeks ago,
nice.
The UCLA women's golf team once again avoided a rough performance. Pun.
I'm glad you got that pun. I capitalized it.
You did. Taking second at the Stanford Intercollegiate, freshman Allison Lee won the individual title as she did at the Betsy Rawls Invitational. And she is also the number one player in the nation as a freshman. So
very good. So there's her, and then there's the girl from USC who's a sophomore. I think her last name is Park. I'm not sure. I believe she came in first overall in the NCAA tournament last year. So the fact that they have those two players in Los Angeles, it's a pretty exciting time in Los Angeles women's golf. So
this is the mecca of women's golf.
Yeah, this is now more than ever. This is the time in Los Angeles. And women's soccer finished its final road trip of the season this past weekend, tying 1-1 with Utah and defeating Colorado 1-0. The win against the Buffs extends UCLA's lead in the Pac-12 title hunt, since the Buffs were in second prior to the match. UCLA, despite tying Utah, outshot the Utes 23-5. So that one maybe kind of a dud for a team that shouldn't be tying in a game like that. But I think, you know, the shots stat shows that maybe it just wasn't their game. Shots weren't going in, so that'll happen.
They dominated possession.
Exactly.
Didn't get the shots to fall. And then the men's cross-country team finished third at Cal State Fullerton's Titan Invitational, while the women's team finished first. Next up for the Bruins will be the Pac-12 Championships this weekend. So they've had a pretty successful season for the most part. They had, I think, the two teams last week finished like 26th or something, so that was kind of one slip-up. Besides that, they've been like number one or in the first or third
Yeah, they've been ranked top 25 pretty consistently throughout the entire year. So, I mean, we'll see come championship time, but I don't think they're going to compete with like the Wisconsins or the American universities or schools like that that are really good. So, the once number 12 UCLA football team fell 42-14 to the Oregon Ducks on Saturday, dropping them to 5-2 on the season and 2-2 in Pac-12 conference play. The Bruins will take on Colorado this Saturday at the Rose Bowl. Kevin, we actually made a bet on this, and you know, it's a segment we all know is You Better Be Right. The spread coming into the game was 21.5. You said UCLA was going to play within the spread. I said the Oregon Ducks would beat the spread. I was right, thanks to entire slew of running backs that Oregon rolled out in the fourth quarter that just rolled over UCLA's defense. And so as your punishment, I will have you do something kind of interesting and a little bit fun for you, kind of express yourself a little bit. We all know DeAnthony Thomas, who is at EatBlackMamba6 on Twitter. You know, he tweets in all caps. He kind of says some things out loud, and I want you to take on his persona for a minute here and read his five most recent tweets in the most normal voice you can.
Do you want me to start with the most recent?
Start with the most recent.
Okay. I want some Wingstop.
All right, next.
Okay. Man, I can't read this out loud. They're all caps. Okay. Man, they don't realize I speak the real motivational speaker.
I don't know what that means. A young Tony Robbins, he is.
Good morning. I've been up since like 6 a.m. cleaning the house. Hashtag bye week. I have to click a few more tweets. 1 second. Oh, you're only at 7% battery.
Yeah, we need to fix
that. Last one here. It's a Vimeo link.
Okay, just read what it says for the Vimeo link.
Things that I do on my time, on my off time. Hashtag run dat.
Okay. All right. So, you know, you get a little perspective of how Kevin and DeAnthony Thomas differ. You know, he has the commitment to wake up at 6 a.m. versus...
I'll just let my roommates clean.
You just let your roommates clean. So there's the difference. Congrats to you, DeAnthony, for being so responsible with your chores. Good for you, man. So this game was kind of a dud, obviously, for UCLA against a very good Oregon team, ranked number 2 in the country. But the overwhelming thing that kind of really stands out for me is the performance of Brett Hundley. Once again, really had a terrible showing, even more so than past weeks. Yeah, really, really terrible. The quarterback, you know, really looked out of sync, and he threw for a career low, and I mean low, 64 yards. So
it's hard to not make 100 yards as a quarterback.
Yeah, as a quarterback in a spread offense. Like what was happening?
Honestly, I feel like he had one good play the entire game, and that was like his 30-yard scramble thing.
Right, but he's had one of those every single game, and it's just because he's fast.
Yeah, he really, I mean, I didn't feel like he had an overwhelming amount of pressure on him. He just made bad reads. He made bad throws. He didn't make throws. I don't know. It was just really a dismal performance by him.
Yeah, and it was almost like it's almost like he wanted to blame the offensive line because they were playing with three freshmen, but you really couldn't do that.
No.
Because Scott Quesenberry played really, really well in his first game, was making reads on the line for Jake Brendel. You had, you know, Beninock, who was called for, I think, one holding call the entire game.
There's no false starts the entire game?
No false starts the entire game. So they completely fixed that. Jake Brendel snapped the ball just perfectly, completely fixed it. He at least fixed his problems. He tried to address them. Meanwhile, you know, UCLA can't complete a pass of more than 11 yards. So I'm not saying it's going to cause him to lose to Colorado or anything, but
you never know.
Let's not get crazy over here, but... That being said, really just they didn't do anything of note, you know, in the second half against Oregon. So,
and really in the first half even, like, they scored 14 points, but both of those were on a short field because of turnovers. So really they didn't have any like full drives at the length of the field. They had one that they got into the red zone and then Hundley threw an interception that was like to no one. Like, I don't even really understand how that was just a bad performance.
Here's the stat I think you can take away from this game.
Okay.
Brett Hundley netted 72 yards and a touchdown on the ground. He netted 64 yards and one touchdown through the air. So I think you can let that kind of speak for itself. And seeing as the rushing total is not even anywhere close to 100 yards, I think that says something. And Brett Hundley even analyzed his own performance to reporters after the game. So we have a clip of that right here.
It's Norwalk. We're not here to be good enough. We're not here to earn respect from anybody. I think we're here to win games, and that's what we come to do. So at the end of the day, we're not playing for respect. We're not playing to be close and barely, you know, barely come out with a L versus the top two team in the country. We're playing to win games, and that's what we got to do.
How much of that do you feel like falls on you?
A lot of it. I think as a quarterback, you got to be able to get the offense going, and you got to lead your team. And with a performance like this, I can't have this, and we as an offense got to put points on the board. So I take personal responsibility and knowing that scoring 14 points isn't enough.
Right. Sometimes.
So we kind of got one question cut off on the other. That's my fault editing that clip. But yeah, for the most part, we saw that UCLA tried really one deep ball down the field. I think their second drive maybe of the second half, where he threw a ball down the sideline to Shaq Evans that was nowhere even close. Granted, Ifo Ekpre Olamu of the cornerback, he's an all Pac-12 cornerback on Oregon, kind of shut down Shaq the entire game, but he really was not in sync with anybody. I mean, Thomas Duarte was open for a lot of the game. Devin Fuller was open on a lot of those, you know, those swing routes. I mean, but then again, it's like, why are you throwing so many swings? So I think there's a combination of play calling being an issue and Hundley just not even coming close to executing and not even really having a vision of anything downfield.
And that's really been, I mean, it's not a new thing for him. Like, the downfield issue has been something that's plagued him the entire season. And really, I mean, if you have a spread offense that can't throw the ball downfield, it's kind of an issue a bit, because then it's not really spread out. If everything has to be, like, short and over the middle, defense has been doing the past couple weeks is just stacking the box, and UCLA can't do anything about it if they're just going to throw swing passes because the defenders are all right there. So, I don't know. They're in a very tough spot right now where, like, I don't really know where they go.
You're at a loss for words.
Exactly, and they're at a loss for wins.
Ooh, that was great. Yeah, so, and we also saw that the running game didn't really suffer that much this week. Sure, they ran for just over maybe 4 yards a carry, but it was at least effective to the point where they could move the ball, particularly in the first half. Mm-hmm. You had Malcolm Jones had a decent performance. Granted, he's not the fastest guy in the world. Paul Perkins kind of seems to be getting it a little bit more with that higher, you know, load of carries, and Hundley even had a few good runs there. So that's a credit to the offensive line, you know, their ability to kind of come back after a tough showing against Stanford and a tough showing against Cal, for that matter. And Jake Brendel even talked about, you know, how they sort of made their improvements where maybe Hundley didn't.
Pretty good most of the night. What did you see?
Yeah, I was pretty satisfied with just how we performed tonight, especially the, you know, the three freshmen. So, you know, we just need to get better.
And the questions, you know, there are a ton of questions coming in the week about, you know, you snapping, and it seemed like it was pretty much fixed throughout the entire game. What was the difference for you?
I just worked on it, and I just made sure that I was thinking about that every single play, just make sure that I didn't, overlook the simplest thing of a snap.
Noel said your offense is struggling. You being the center, what are you seeing, and why do you think that?
I really don't think it's struggling. You know, it's just of course the score doesn't show that, you know, but we all just need to be one working unit, and when some things are off, you know, it just doesn't work. You know, we all just need to do our job.
And yeah, so I mean, he mentioned the entire offense is out of sync, but one unit we really haven't talked about this entire show is the defense, who really played well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you looked at, they made a switch at the linebacker position. They switched Jordan Zumwalt because he's longer, I guess, out to outside, and then they brought Miles Jack inside so he can kind of play on the ball a little bit more, maybe have some more impact plays against the running backs, and it worked. Jordan Zumwalt played by far the most aggressive game of his career, like more than aggressive. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute, but Miles Jack even caught DeAnthony Thomas on a couple runs from behind. So it seems like it's a move that, you know, worked well, and they stopped Oregon early on. They only allowed 14 points in the first half against a team that, you know, should average about 30. So
yeah, and I mean, you see 42 points, the defense gives up 42 points,
right?
Like, oh, that's not a great performance. But Oregon scores 58 points a game prior to this week. So
exactly.
That's what, 16 points below the average.
That's a down performance.
And the defense played really well.
And if Brett Hundley and the offense can hang onto the ball for a little bit longer, maybe get a first down here and there, that doesn't happen. So in the second half, I think their last four drives, they managed two or three first downs, if that. And so the defense is right back on the field again, while Oregon keeps pumping these running backs, whether it's, you know, Tyner Byron Marshall or DeAnthony Thomas. Those are 3 5-star players that are coming in against the UCLA defense that it's gassed and that it's had to try to stop arguably the best quarterback in the country for, you know, 50 minutes of football prior to that. So, you know, you can't expect them to, you know, win the game for UCLA. I think that comes right back to the offenses. They have to do something in order to keep it close against a team that averages, like you said, about 58 points a game. So,
yeah, I mean, and you mentioned it there too, how they're doing, they limited them to 42 points. I mean, that's weird to say, but I'm sure, as you mentioned, they were gassed. Like, the offense didn't give them time to rest at all. The defense, they forced turnovers too,
Yeah, they forced
the defense did their job. Like,
right.
Right off the bat, but second play of the game?
Second play of the game, there was a fumble forced by Miles Jack, recovered by Randall Goforth. Anthony Barr, right in this clutch time with Marcus Mariota driving down the field. I think it was something like they were within the 10-yard line, maybe, or close, at least. They were in the red zone, and Anthony Barr comes and recovers a fumble, and then there's the punt block by Miles Jack. So, like, what more can the defense do for
him? And really, like, as we mentioned earlier, the defense was really the reason UCLA scored any points at all, because they had... Their first score came off of the second play fumble recovery, and then the second score came off the punt block. So they were set up in Oregon territory both times to be able to score. So really the defense carried them this game, both offensively and defensively, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and they should have had another touchdown. They were the one drive that UCLA, the offense by its own merit, got into the red zone. Hundley made probably the worst read I've ever seen of a quarterback this season. Has Shaq, I think, or... Shaq open in the end, not open in the end zone. He's not open at all. He's double covered by, like we said, the corner that's been.
I don't think even in the end zone. It was just like on the flat kind of.
Yeah, it was just out in the flat, like 10 yards ahead of him. Hundley severely underthrows it to the point where it's like he's like, "Hey, Oregon defenseman, I'm going to throw the ball right directly to you and
please intercept it.
Please intercept this ball." And he had two like that were just terrible. The second one was the dagger that made Oregon go up 28-14. Set them up for that drive, but really just a bad performance overall. And it kind of begs the question: what do you do if you're Jim Mora? I mean, you're not going to bench. You're not going to bench Brett
Bring
Hundley.
On Jerry Neuheisel.
Yeah, you can't bring on Jerry New. You're not going to burn Ashanti Woolard. I think Ashanti Woolard probably is a worse option at this point. You're throwing him into the fire when he has had zero game experience. So you kind of just have to stick with him and hope it gets better at this point.
Yeah, I mean, really, as you mentioned, there's no options. So, I mean, Hundley, he's proven that he is a good quarterback.
Yeah,
we saw that last year. We saw that for the first half of this year up until...
Up until
Utah,
the second half of the Utah game.
Yeah, and we've seen flashes of even greatness, not just goodness.
Right.
Against, like, the second half of Nebraska, who was amazing.
He's incredible in that game.
We've seen that he has the talent to do this. We know he has the talent. Something's just off, and I guess he needed to figure that out, what's wrong, because, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was initially, like, Moore kind of recognized last night in our conference call, there's initially some fear with, you know, the missing parts on offensive line and kind of the moving parts, but... That can't be an excuse in these next couple weeks. I mean, they might have, you know, made the play calling more conservative because of all the new offensive linemen that were freshmen. But I don't think they should really do that this week because they only allowed 3 sacks. I think maybe one of them was their own fault. The offensive line really kind of seemed in sync. Brendel snaps were good, like we said. They only had one. They had 0 false start calls. So I think, you know, now is the time to open up the offense and see if it's really, you know, Brett Hundley doesn't have the throws there, or if it's the play calling that needs to change officially. So I think that's the thing.
Yeah, and with the play calling too, like, even if they are trying to compensate for some inexperienced people in the offensive line, I mean, throwing swing passes every single play or running up the middle on 3rd and 5 with Steven Manfro.
That was the worst play
call. That's not going to win you games, regardless. I mean, it's playing it safe, but, like, you can't play it safe against a team
They were playing not to lose against a team that averages 50.
You can't play not to lose when you're the underdog.
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
Exactly. When you have when Vegas says you have 3+ touchdowns to make up on a team, you can't just say, we'll hope
times.
To be close at the end. Yeah. And I think it also brings up kind of a harsh reality that UCLA's faced these last couple weeks. You know, the season starts, they have this fairy tale story, they're 5-0. Oh, they're going to go play on the road at Stanford and Oregon. We're going to be so great, you know. This is the year we finally have it. And then they're not even close against those two teams. So maybe against Stanford, you can argue they're close, but at the end of the day, they really didn't get it done. And so that's, you know, Jim Mora was a little teary-eyed in his post-game press conference, and kind of rightfully so, because all their hopes for this season came crashing down to earth, and they might even be in a worse spot than they were last year. So I think maybe this is their toughest loss they've had since Jim Mora took over, and maybe since 2005. Because last year in the Pac-12 championship game, they lost that game, but they realized, all right, we're in a good place. You know, we're going to be back here. We're going to be a good football team, and this is just a sign of things to come, that if we can overcome this, we'll be good. Now, a year later, they haven't overcome it, and Jim Mora is obviously upset after the game.
That's a great question, because it showed me both. It showed me how close we are, and yet how far we are away, and how many things we have to get better at. And what we've got to do is learn from these last 2 weeks and then apply the lessons. Not just, oh, we learned. We got to apply it. We got to get better. We got to find a way. And, you know, you look at Stanford, you look at Oregon, and they're two similar programs. They've been doing it a long time a certain way. They recruit the same types of athletes to fit their system. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and go, hey, we want to be Oregon or we want to be Stanford. We want to be the type of program that can have consistent success. So, yeah, it showed me bold. It showed me we're so close, but it doesn't matter. We're not after being close. Heck with being close. Losers can be close. You know, we want to get it. We want to win those games. The coulda, the woulda, the shit, all that. We don't want that. I'm tired of that. It's time for UCLA to turn the frickin' page and be something different and win those games. That's what it's time to be.
So we saw a little Dennis Green mic slap, you know.
Yeah,
well, we are who we thought they were.
I was scared just listening to that. Like, wow.
I think UCLA has kind of come to the point where they're not who they thought they were. So take that how you will.
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of, I was talking to you yesterday about your story. You wrote the notebook on this. Brett Homey's performance is kind of a microcosm of UCLA's performance this season, where there's all these high expectations. He's a Heisman mentioned person,
right?
And then you realize he's not there. So.
That being said, they are still 27.5-point favorites over Colorado this week. And that's I think, a problem because they're going to be able to come out and roll out that same, you know, conservative little nothing, you know, short passes, swing passes, have the occasional design run for Brett Hundley, the little draw plays to Steven Manfro on third down, and it's going to absolutely work. They're going to still crush him because Colorado, frankly, is a high school team. Like, I'll bet you... Seriously, I would put money down on this, that like Folsom High School, which is one of the best high schools in the state, or like
De La Salle,
for example, could come out, maybe Katy High School in Texas, could come out, maybe play okay with Colorado, because they're getting guys from the Colorado area that, you know, aren't picked up by the other Pac-12 schools. So I really think that those schools can compete with, okay, I'm getting off that point, but Colorado's not a very good team. It's going to work against Colorado, and then they're going to come out against Arizona and think the same thing is going to work. If they beat Arizona, they're going to come out against Washington and say, all right, I think it could probably work again, and it's not going to. So I think they kind of need a change in mentality, and you know that might not come, which is dangerous. So I'd like you to go game by game for the rest of the year, these next five games, and tell me how you think it's going to work out for UCLA.
Okay. Colorado loss. Just kidding. That's going to be, I mean... I don't think they're going to play amazingly. It's going to look like they're playing amazingly because they're playing, as you mentioned, like a scrub
right.
team.
Right.
But they'll get the win there. Then what's Arizona's next?
Yeah.
I say they get the win there, but it's closer than they're expecting.
Okay.
So I'm going to say less than a 20-point win.
Okay. And they traditionally don't play well against Arizona, at Arizona, that being said. Washington?
Washington. I've been on this one the whole... I think they're going to lose at Washington.
Yeah.
Is it at Washington or is it at home?
It's at home.
It's at home.
It's a Friday night game.
I think they're going to lose, especially on the short week. It throws off their schedule, kind of.
Okay. Then you have Arizona State.
Arizona State, I say win.
Okay.
Then USC?
Yeah.
Win over USC.
Okay.
And then...
At that point, I'm not sure they're... Well, because you have them beating ASU, you have them in the Pac-12 title game.
Yeah. So then lose to Oregon. / Stanford, I'm assuming.
And then Alamo Bowl against Baylor.
Lose.
Okay.
Well, Baylor's about number five now?
Yeah. So I mean, it might not be.
Somewhere around that, okay. Yeah. But.
Yeah, I have win over Colorado, obviously. Win over Arizona. I have them beating Washington because I think Washington's not as good as people think. I think Keith Price has a little Brett Hundley syndrome. but I think they will lose to ASU. My cousin Jack actually texted me and said, shout out to my cousin Jack. ASU has not beaten a team that has ended the season in the AP Top 25 on the road since 1996. So that's kind of telling of ASU, but I think they turn it around with this game and really kind of expose UCLA, which means they don't make the Pac-12 title game, even if they beat USC, which I think they will. And I think they will go to either the Holiday Bowl or the Alma Bowl, and I think they can win depending on who.
Same as last year, basically.
Same as last year. No different than last year, which I think is kind of telling of the season as a whole.